Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. On today's show, we are discussing the future of the FCC under a second Trump administration and Israel's ongoing assault on Gaza. First, the FCC. Donald Trump has named Brendan Carr to head the FCC. Carr became an FCC commissioner in 2017 after being nominated by Trump. Brendan Carr is one of the co-authors of Project 2025. The FCC chair spot does not require a Senate vote. So who is Brendan Carr? What can we expect from him as FCC chair? Joining us are two guests who have written about Brendan Carr. Craig Aaron is president and co-CEO of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund, an organization devoted to changing media and technology policy, promoting the public interest, and strengthening democracy. Craig Aaron writes, Brendan Carr has sided with big companies and against the public interest on nearly every important issue to come before the FCC. Hi, Craig. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me back, Rose.
Pema Levy is a reporter at Mother Jones, where she covers the Supreme Court, politics, and democracy. Pema writes, Carr has laid out a vision for an FCC that would deregulate most broadcasters and telecommunications companies while cracking down on and intimidating traditional media, growing the reach of conservative media, and unleashing disinformation on social media platforms. The result? An information ecosystem tilted further in Trump's favor. Hi, Pema. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you. Craig, let's start off with you, just a basic question. Can you remind us, what is the FCC and how does it affect people's lives?
Sure. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is an independent agency, part of the federal government, and it's their job to oversee the public airwaves. So they hand out broadcast licenses, they tell cell phone companies which parts of the publicly available spectrum they can use to provide service. They oversee your cable and phone companies, your connection to the internet. It's supposed to be their job to look out for consumers, to protect them from corporate abuse, to keep them from getting ripped off, to ensure there are a diversity of owners and diversity of voices on the airwaves. Unfortunately, all too often, the FCC has also been a place that's really been captured by the industries they're supposed to be regulating. But they make the rules of the road for everything we watch, see, hear, and read.
And what would you add to that, Pema? Because with Carr as head of the FCC, he's also going to have a 3-2 FCC, three Republicans and two Democrats, right?
That's correct, yes. So when, you know, companies come forward saying that they want to, you know, for example, Sinclair Broadcasting Corporation wants to acquire more local stations, you know, those are the rules that, you know, they'd be overseeing. If there's a local station where their license is up for renewal, Brendan Carr would be able to, like, have say over whether or not that got renewed. But I think one of the things, in addition to the actual powers of the FCC, that's important here is just the effect of the threat, right? You know, we saw, for example, the billionaire owners of two newspapers in the run-up to the election pull endorsements for Harris just because they thought Trump might win and they wanted to curry favor. So, you know, the media doesn't want to get in trouble. They don't want their licenses to be under threat, even if it would, you know, ultimately be difficult for the FCC to enforce, you know, revoking those licenses. So I think just that the chilling effect of Carr as commissioner coming out and criticizing coverage, saying it broke the rules even if it didn't, criticizing social media platforms where he doesn't actually have authority, but again, when it's a government official going out and making these claims, I think that really chills activity. So I think there's both the actual powers of the FCC and then there's sort of the soft power of being a regulator threatening, platforms and media companies.
So to the point you just made there, Pema, How serious is this? Because you write, as a FCC commissioner, Carr is ready to use the FCC to punish media companies for coverage he dislikes. It's a chilling example of how Carr could, over the next 4 years, wield the commission's powers to squash dissent and create an environment of self-censorship among media organizations. So how serious should we take these threats?
Yeah, and I think Carr is one example of these threats, but they've been coming from the administration, or the incoming administration, I should say, more broadly. So, for example, Trump has sued CBS News over their 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris. It's a baseless lawsuit, but there it is. He filed a complaint against Washington Post, I believe it was. So they're sort of using their muscle to threaten media outlets. And Carr did the same thing. He went on Fox News a couple times right after Kamala Harris was on Saturday Night Live and accused NBC News of violating the equal time rule, which they didn't do. But that didn't stop them, right? So in all of these cases, there is no actual violation, but that hasn't stopped threatening. That hasn't stopped lawsuits. That hasn't stopped, complaints. And so I think that you can already see this manifesting. And so, yeah, you know, if an interview of, you know, for example, someone critical to Trump is aired, they might take umbrage with that. And all of a sudden, you know, that media outlet has to call up their lawyers and, you know, defend themselves before a commission or before a court even. And, you know, even if the actual authority to do something isn't there, even if the case is unfounded, I think that just the threat of having to do that is probably enough to change media coverage.
What are your thoughts, Aaron? You gave an interview to Forbes and you said his promotion to FCC chair could have a chilling effect on the ability of TV news networks to do their jobs, particularly if these networks produce coverage that Trump and his allies do not like. What else would you add?
Well, this is where I agree a lot with what Pema said, that, you know, the first step is chilling. It's the Brendan Carr goes before Congress and they say, well, if, you know, would you crack down on CBS or ABC for fact-checking the president? And the obvious answer is, of course not. I'm at the FCC. I should protect the First Amendment. And what Brendan Carr says is, well, we'll have to see. And now that he's gotten the job, now that he's gotten the promotion, he's doing a lot of saber rattling, saying, oh, we need to look at whether he's even using the language of advocates to say, well, we're going to have to look at, you know, whether these stations are serving the public interest. Where it gets dangerous is when this rhetoric, this chilling effect is combined with their regulatory power, with their power over mergers and acquisitions, because we're already seeing, for example, CEOs at Nexstar, one of the biggest broadcasters, owner of local television stations across the country, saying, oh, a new administration, if you could just get rid of the limits on how many TV stations we could own all across the country, we'll be sure to really invest in fair and balanced coverage and get rid of activist journalism. That's Perry Sook, the head of Nexstar, the chairman of the National Association of Broadcasters, already obeying in advance, already asking for favors. Hmm. You've got Brendan Carr hobnobbing with Elon Musk, not only all throughout his Twitter feed, but going to the launch of his satellites into space with Trump. This is the regulator who's supposed to decide our satellites, you know, who gets access to the airwaves, you know, buddying up to Elon Musk at every turn. That's how he got this job. So when you take the regulatory power, all the rhetoric against free speech, and then what Pema was getting at, this combination of public and private power, threats from government regulators tied to these very dangerous lawsuits that maybe the New York Times or CBS News can stand up against. But what about nonprofit institutions? What about, you know, places like Mother Jones doing serious investigative reporting? They're also squeezing them. Those are very expensive lawsuits. Even if they're completely fictitious, you still have to hire lawyers. You still have to go through discovery. They're coming after nonprofit tax status of nonprofits everywhere. it's this combination that Brendan Carr is actively participating in while simultaneously taking a sledgehammer to consumer protections, to the rules that protect the free and open internet, to diversity efforts at the FCC. He's tearing all that down while making all of these threats. And that what's makes him so dangerous, and especially because he has said at every turn, signaled, I'm here to serve Donald Trump. I'm here to serve Elon Musk. I'm here to push forward their agenda, not look out for the American public or American consumers, you know, increasingly at the mercy of the largest companies, companies who want to get bigger. You don't necessarily have to censor through, you know, just shutting down, taking away licenses. A very effective way to censor speech that we've seen in a lot of other parts of the world is you just sell these outlets to your cronies. You allow them to expand their media power, and then they'll do the censoring for you.
Craig Aaron is president and co-CEO of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund. Pema Levy is a reporter with Mother Jones. Today, we're talking about the future of the FCC under the Trump administration. He named Brendan Carr to be the next chair of the FCC. Carr became an FCC commissioner in 2017 after being nominated by Trump. And these numbers are very important. Ars Technica's John Brocken reports that under Biden, the FCC had a 2-2 deadlock for most of the term. Trump will name a Republican to fill the FCC's fifth seat. That means that Carr will likely get a 3-2 Republican majority early in his term. We're going to be talking about this for just over 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions about what we can expect from the FCC, they've got a lot of power, as you're hearing from our guest today. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. We are still fixing our toll-free line, but you can call in to 415-841-4135. 415-841-4135, or email yourcall@kalw.org. What about that, Craig? A lot of people probably didn't know that the FCC had a 2-2 deadlock for most of Biden's term, and Carr will most likely get a 3-2 Republican majority early in his term. Can you talk about the significance of that? What does that mean? Because are these three Republicans a shoo-in for what he's trying to do, or do you think one of them might try to block some of what he's trying to do?
Well, I think what we're seeing and what we've seen in the early days of the second Trump administration forming is they're not interested in trying to appoint anyone with any inkling of independence, right? They're going to seek out, and they haven't named an appointee yet, but they're going to seek out someone who is there to follow Brendan Carr's lead, is probably a clone of Brendan Carr, someone who will vote with him every time, no matter what. Now, that is also an opportunity, though, to disrupt what they're trying to do, because while Brendan Carr is already on the FCC and he doesn't have to go through Senate confirmation, this next commissioner will. They will have to go through Senate confirmation, and that's going to be a chance to put their record out there. But I think what you're also getting at, unfortunately, is this is where Republicans move really aggressively and Democrats move really slowly. When the Democrats were in charge, it took them a year or more to get five seats filled on the FCC. Delay, they allowed all kinds of obstacles to be put in their way. Republicans move quickly. We've never had an FCC chair named this early. They are getting ready. They're going to try to fill that seat. They're going to try to take a sledgehammer to everything the previous administration did, and they're going to move very aggressively. They're being very clear about that. And it gets dangerous because we see all these high-profile appointees, the Matt Gaetzes and others, they get a lot of attention. It's people like Brendan Carr who've bought all the way into the Trump agenda, but also understand how these agencies work. He's been there for years. He's a savvy lawyer. He understands what needs to be taken apart and unplugged and smashed. And those are the kind of appointees who are so dangerous under someone like Trump, because they can leave so much lasting damage. He'll continue to perform and do the show for Fox News, but where it gets dangerous is really when he gets into the regulations, gets into the laws, and starts, you know, taking things apart in a way that are very, very difficult to put back together in the future.
You both have also written about Brendan Carr's relationship with Elon Musk. And Pema, you write that Musk stands to get a whole lot richer because of this. During Trump's first term, the FCC awarded Musk's satellite internet company Starlink $885 million to bring internet access to rural areas. But under the Biden administration, the FCC worried the funding might be poorly spent, stripped related contracts from Starlink and several other companies. And Craig, you've also written extensively about this. The Free Press was actually the first group to sound the alarm about a lot of this. But Pema, can you just tell us, first off, for those who don't know, why is the government giving Starlink such massive contracts?
Yeah, so the government wanted to increase internet access in rural areas. And Starlink is a satellite internet company. It's very new to the market, and so in a sense, it is somewhat untested in terms of its capacity to do that. And so that is why during the first Trump administration, this money was sort of provisionally given to Starlink in order to provide that service. And then under the Biden administration, the Democrats in control of that committee, is my understanding, felt that that Starlink wasn't proven in its ability to do that, and they say that that's why the funds were revoked. And Carr has used this as an example to say, like, this is political, and sort of come out as a pro-Musk figure, and Musk has noticed that, and they sort of struck up this relationship that, you know, it's not even secret. Like, it's sort of like a back and forth on X, where Carr defends Starlink and he defends X, and he talks about, you know, how Musk is being targeted, and then Musk says thank you very much. And so, you know, you now have a situation. I think it's important to say this, that Musk is, due to the incredible amount of money, some $200 million that he put in to help Trump win, he is now going to run this not an official, an unofficial department, that's going to recommend all of these cuts to the government. At the same time, he is buddying up with people like Carr, who can help direct significant funds to his company. So at the same time that he's saying, let's cut all this government funding, all this government work, all the various work across all the agencies that the government does to help ordinary people, our parks, our medicines, all of this stuff. At the same time he's doing that, he's also making friends with people who can give him and his companies hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars.
Aaron, can you, we're going to have to do a whole show about this, but can you tell us, why is the infrastructure in the United States so poor in so many parts of the country, given that it is almost impossible to do very important tasks these days without having a good internet connection?
Well, I think the short answer is because we've given so much of it away to big corporations that were more interested in the bottom line than actually making sure everybody had service. It's almost forgotten somehow now, but one of the big accomplishments of the Biden administration was investing tens of billions of dollars in expanding broadband access, money that's still being delivered out to the states, but also investing in broadband affordability, which is actually the biggest barrier to people having those connections, is simply the cost is too high. Right. So that's what this administration that's in there right now was trying to do. It's really one of the signature accomplishments of the Biden administration. But what Brendan Carr has said is he's going to do everything he can to get rid of that. You know, he thinks Elon Musk's billions of dollars being taken away to essentially provide internet service to golf courses and airport runways and highway medians, places where people don't live. That's why the FCC took the money away. Brendan Carr thinks that's regulatory harassment. He's looking, as Pema suggests, for ways to move billions and billions of dollars toward the private sector, toward people who have not delivered these services, regardless of what it is, what the cost is to your average consumer who's struggling and needs that connection just to go to school, just to have a job, just to talk to their family. It's become that important in people's lives. That's something a lot of people in Congress finally understood during the pandemic. But somebody like Brendan Carr in charge, he's looking to continue to privatize that, allow it to be exploited in ways that I think are very dangerous for the future of the internet, putting it out of reach for more Americans and certainly costing them so much more just for that basic essential access that they need to simply participate in society.
And just to remind listeners, this didn't get much attention at all during the election, but President Biden and Vice President Harris announced in September that they were investing $90 billion to close the digital divide. Since President Biden took office, more than 2.5 million people who were previously unserved and small businesses, homes and small businesses, have been connected to high-speed internet access. Aaron, Free Press was the first group to sound the alarm that a huge amount of taxpayer money was being wasted under the Rural Digital Opportunities Fund and allegedly deployed internet service to uninhabited areas, big box retail stores, airport runways, and luxury resorts. You write, because the Trump FCC did such a shoddy job of designing the initial program, many of the beneficiaries, including Elon Musk, were poised to cash in by promising to serve little pockets of land that already had service or where it was unlikely they'd ever sign up as a single customer or sign up a single customer.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm old enough to remember when Republicans were supposed to be the party that cared about government waste, that cared about taxpayer dollars being wasted, ratepayer dollars. Every month when you pay your phone or your cable bill, there's those little fees that go to actually expand internet access. Well, Brendan Carr is someone who thinks it's most important is that we make sure that goes into Elon Musk's pockets, no matter if it actually results in anybody getting affordable internet access.
Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Sarah in Oakland. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for holding.
My question is, you were talking about the FCC having a 2-2 balance all through the Biden administration. Why was that the case? Why wasn't there a third Democrat put on?
There's such an important story behind that. Craig, do you want to take it?
Sure. I'll try to do the quick version, which is that President Biden nominated a very good public interest advocate named Gigi Sohn, and the Senate refused to confirm her, put her through several hearings. Unfortunately, I think the Democratic Party failed her by not advancing her nomination. And there was, you know, infighting on who the nominee should be. So it was delay, delay, delay. The Republicans threw a lot of obstructions. And she didn't get appointed. And as long as she wasn't there, they couldn't vote on anything. So it wasn't until about a year ago that finally a commissioner named Ana Gomez was named to the commission. And then immediately the commission could get to work protecting net neutrality, protecting against digital discrimination, doing a number of very, very important things, some of which really were under the radar. But it was a political failure that left the FCC deadlocked. This is unfortunately the kind of mistake that the Biden administration made. The Trump administration is not making that mistake. They are very focused on these appointments. They understand that getting your personnel in place is how you get things done in Washington. Unfortunately, the Democrats just didn't do that in a timely manner. And, you know, we're now in a worse situation because of it.
We actually did a show on that, Sarah, and you can find that at KALW.org. I said Suzanne because Suzanne is emailing us. Suzanne writes, what will happen to NPR and people telling the truth about Trump? Paywalls are going up on most podcasts. And if I can't afford $100 a month for a podcast, how do I stay informed? What are your thoughts about this, Pema? We're getting a lot of hearing from a lot of listeners who are very concerned about what's in store for the future of an independent press under Trump.
Yeah, I'm also concerned. Look, I think that there are a lot of really good sources of news out there. First of all, local news. If you've got like a good local news outlet, you know, support it and read it. That's really important. Local news is going out of business in this country, and it's really problematic for democracy and for holding people accountable. you know, all sorts of outlets from, you know, the broadcasters we've been talking about to New York Times, Washington Post, I'll put a plug in for Mother Jones, ProPublica, all of these outlets are doing really important work, and some of it is behind a paywall, but not all of it. and so, I, you know, journalism is it's not cheap, and we haven't found good ways to really fund it right now. And so I think when you do have the resources to pay for the journalism that you value, that really helps keep that journalism in business, and that's really important. And then the other piece of this is I think that we just do have to watch out for the ways in which this administration is likely to come after the press. And I'm not saying that in a partisan way. I'm saying that because that's what they've said they're going to do. And so I'm taking them at their word that they believe that, you know, the press is the enemy of the people, as Trump says, and that there will be, you know, lawsuits or, you know, chilling statements and threats in order to bring about friendly coverage and to, you know, not be numb to that and to stand up to it in whatever ways are available.
And just quickly, Craig, what would you add?
Well, I would add that it is a real threat. Elon Musk, in his op-ed declaring this new Department of Government Efficiency that he's doing, specifically targeted spending on the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. They are coming for NPR's funding, and that really matters, especially for the smaller stations, for stations that are independent, that aren't just, they're providing all kinds of viewpoints. If you can afford to support these publications, if you can afford that Mother Jones subscription, it is incredibly important that we support our independent voices, the reporters and shows like this one that aren't going to obey in advance, that aren't going to be like Jeff Bezos and try to go away because they've got millions of dollars of contracts with the federal government to run the CIA's computers or what have you. We need to really get behind our independent voices. We need to stand up for journalists, and we need to recognize that this is how authoritarianism, this is how autocracy works. They come for the messengers. They come for the media first. So we have to stand up for those reporters out there that are actually doing the hard work, that are actually asking the hard questions. And we have to make sure that, you know, we're spreading that information to counteract so much of the garbage that's out there, and the willingness of so many of these big corporate media outlets to just get in line behind Trump, because that's going to enrich them. That's going to help their stockholders. It makes this independent media voices more important than ever.
Craig Aaron is president and co-CEO of Free Press and the Free Press Action Fund. Pema Levy is a reporter with Mother Jones, and they both have extensively written about Brendan Carr, the next chair of the FCC. Pema and Craig, thank you for your work. We'd love to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after a break, we will discuss the ongoing coverage of Israel's assault on Gaza. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.